Hey, welcome to this episode of Light 'Em Up. We take a deep dive on the criminal justice system, crime scene investigation, and leadership. We enlighten, educate, and empower others with the truth. Like it or not, the truth disturbs, the truth divides, but ultimately, the truth delivers. Hey, I'm your host, Phil Rizzo. I'm the principal owner of Rizzo's Protective Group. We are a security consulting firm focusing on high-risk behaviors and mitigating those behaviors, headquartered out of Akron, Ohio, and with offices in the Bronx, New York, and Cerro Alto, the Dominican Republic. As we put the ball on the tee to line things up for kickoff, we speak life, health, and prosperity over each and every one of you, and we want to thank you for joining us. Tonight, on this incendiary investigative follow-up to our most recent record-setting explosive episode entitled Corruption and Death in Cajun Country, the tragic story of Crystal McCrory Jones. With little to no investigation, a rush to judgment, an intentional effort at covering up the facts and overlooking evidence. We ask why. This episode we refer to to date has been actively downloaded by more people globally than any other episode in our 5-season history. And that was only the first episode of a truly riveting series of investigative episodes that we hope to share with our then special guest, Jana Gajewski-Latiger. Jana, as you may recall, is the sister of Crystal McCrory Jones. Crystal's untimely and suspicious death is the focus of our investigational series. We want you to know we're committed to this story for as long as it takes to bring about justice and truth. Just as we were for Jalen Walker, Brian Umana, and the Terry and Dunn case equally as well. On this exclusive episode of Light 'Em Up, we probe deeper, farther, and wider into the case that we know isn't right, a case that we factually know stinks to high heaven. We have more detailed information to share with you on this episode. Tonight, we examine what specifically is a medico-legal, that's medico-legal death investigation, medico-legal. Also known as an MLDI, or simply a death investigation. Now, you may have an idea from what you may have seen on TV, but we have the facts, not the fiction. And we're here to deliver the story to you with integrity and passion. Just the facts, ma'am. Just the facts. Now, people accuse us of only telling one side of the story. They accuse us of being anti-cop and not telling the facts. The fact of the matter is, we're not anti-cop. We just don't tell the facts that they want to hear. We support justice, fairness, and for the equitable application of the law for all. In a time of uncertainty, facts provide clarity. In a time of misinformation, facts correct the record. And in a time of crisis, facts matter most. Tonight, as we mentioned, we'll explore what a medico-legal death investigation consists of and why it is of the utmost importance that it takes place in a timely, professional, and painstakingly thorough manner. As important as it is to remain objective, we submit that the authorities in this case know that this case is foul. We submit that they've simply willfully chosen to look the other way. That, my friends, is a textbook definition of corruption and a dereliction of duty under the color of authority. The simple truth is, there are too many questions, too many irregularities, and not enough answers. And with this, we are speaking truth to power. We want to know why. Again, if you're just tuning in, our focus is the untimely, suspicious death of Crystal McCrory Jones in the sleepy, small, rural town of Oak Grove, Louisiana. According to the 2020 U.S. Census data, its population neared 1,440 people. Man, I bet it's quiet there at night. I bet you can really, really hear the crickets. Hell, to be honest, I think it sounds like it might be a nice place to live compared to what we have here in the big city. But upon further review, maybe not. Since the airing of our episode, we've heard from more than a few people that something fishy is going on down there in that sleepy small town and the surrounding vicinity. People say that things haven't been right since the current sheriff has taken office, that more than one person has turned up dead, and the death has been quickly ruled a suicide. When in fact, when the fact pattern was more than just a little bit suspicious and the evidence pointed in other directions. Like I said, more than just one of the residents of Oak Grove, Louisiana, for whatever reasons, unbeknownst to us, fear the local sheriff and fear retaliation if they ask too many questions or speak out. You know, I'm sitting there scratching my head, thinking, just what the hell is exactly going on in this sleepy small town of Oak Grove, Louisiana? Don't move a muscle. Buckle up as we dig deeper than you've ever dug before into those aspects that normally take place in a medical legal death investigation. All this y pero mucho, mucho más aquí y solamente aquí, here on Light 'Em Up. Now to be certain, as before, all persons are cloaked in the presumption of innocence, and they remain as such up to and until they are found to be otherwise guilty in a court of law. Certainly, that applies here today, as it always will with us here on Light 'Em Up. We're not true crime. We're the truth in the criminal justice system. We seek justice within the justice system. Not like the extrajudicial mob that hounded, chased, and killed Frankenstein. Hey, let's get our hip waders on and get ready to peel back the fact pattern on this episode. On the morning of Thursday, February 9th, 2023, nearing 8 a.m., it was approximately 48 degrees in Oak Grove, Louisiana. There was still a crispness and a slight chill in the air as temperatures headed towards a high of 67 degrees for that day. The fact pattern shows that Tony Jones, Crystal's husband, was the last person to see Crystal alive at or around 8 a.m. Crystal was found dead in the home that they shared, with what was reported to be an alleged self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head. A 9mm semi-automatic slug entering the right temporal area of the skull and exiting on the left side rendered her dead at the scene. Now, the proximity of the gun to her head and the high-velocity impact caused a wound that was through and through, in one side and out the other. Brutal. A slug was never recovered at the scene. An officer of the West Carroll Parish Sheriff's Department appeared at their home in order to, quote, conduct a welfare check. A welfare check? A welfare check on whom? For what reason? How did anyone know that anyone needed a welfare check? Who the hell called in the welfare check? Why not make public the 911 dispatch recording that speaks to the need for this, quote, welfare check? Let's hear who called it in. Let's hear their voice. During the early morning hours of February 9th, 2023, Crystal made an appointment to see her doctor for a 2:30 afternoon appointment that same day. We ask this. Who makes an appointment to be somewhere in the afternoon and then shoots themselves in the head in the morning before the appointment? That simply makes no damned sense. None. Now I can hear my editor screaming in my ear, stay objective, stay objective. We can be objective reporters and still state that fact. Because as we've said, and as I submit, that isn't how it happened. She didn't kill herself. That would be did not. Yet within 1 hour and 45 minutes following the knowledge of her death was ruled a suicide. Why? What was the hurry? While education has always been one of our foundational pillars of Light 'Em Up, our mission also requires us to be committed to being true to the truth. In anticipation of airing this episode, we researched it, and it's a fact that according to the Concise Oxford Textbook of Psychiatry, published in 2005, only 25-30% of suicides are accompanied by a note. A suicide note And we're going to share with you some very important vocabulary words and medical terminology that you will hear throughout this series, which may be misunderstood if not clearly defined. For our criminal justice and forensic science students who are required to tune in to this episode as part of the curriculum and their audio lab coursework, it's very important to read the terms and definitions below carefully, as these terms will certainly appear on your midterm exams. Let's define those terms. An autopsy. An autopsy is a highly specialized surgical procedure that consists of a thorough examination of a corpse to determine the cause and manner of death and to evaluate any disease or injury that may be present. It should be performed by a specialized medical doctor called a pathologist. Let's discuss an autopsy report. An autopsy report is a report completed by the medical examiner or other physician trained in this assessment to present results on examination findings, evidence of injury and therapy, and the cause and manner of death. Let's discuss the term the cause of death. The cause of death is all those diseases, morbid conditions or injuries which either resulted in or contributed to death and the circumstances of the accident or violence which produced such injuries. Also relevant to this episode, the manner of death. The manner of death explains the circumstances in which a death arose. Now, the International Classification of Diseases, also known as the ICD, classifies manner of death as disease, accident, intentional self-harm, assault, legal intervention, war, pending investigation, unknown, or manner undetermined. Also, the term a medical certificate of cause of death is the WHO International Standard form of the medical certificate of cause of death, also referred to as a MCCD for a medical certificate of cause of death. This is the recommended form for recording cause of death information for certification. Now, if you look at the form contains data fields for the immediate, antecedent, and underlying causes of death, and the manner of death for completion by a physician. Now, we'll examine those three words in a moment. The term postmortem. Postmortem. A postmortem is an examination of a body that takes place after death to determine the cause and manner of death. The term postmortem is sometimes used interchangeably with autopsy. Now let's take it a step further and define postmortem as a broader term encompassing any examination of the body post-death, which could be an external examination or include an internal examination and or termed an autopsy. Now we mentioned we talk about the immediate cause of death. The immediate cause of death is the final disease, injury, or complication directly causing the death. An immediate cause of death must always be reported on line A. It can be the sole entry in the cause of death section if that condition is the only condition causing the death. Also, the concept of an antecedent cause of death. Now, an antecedent cause of death is any disease or condition which has given rise to another disease or condition in the morbid, sickness-related train of events leading up to death. The underlying cause of death is the disease or injury which initiated the train of morbid events leading directly to death, or the circumstances of the accident or violence which produced the fatal injury. The medico-legal determination of suicide requires that death be established as self-inflicted and intentional. Hell, neither have been established in this case. And again, we ask, why not? Crystal left no suicide note whatsoever. She loved life, and she loved those whom she encountered in it. I've heard 1,000 times that she was so sweet, that she was so tender, that she was so kind. Sure, there were some difficult times in life, but tell me, whose life isn't touched by adversity or struggle? Now at this point, perhaps you may be thinking to yourself, why is an investigation so important? The medico-legal death investigation, MLDI system is responsible for conducting death investigations and certifying the cause and manner of deaths that are unnatural, violent, or suspicious, also sudden or unexpected, unusual, or otherwise represent a potential threat to public health and safety. A suicide investigation and a homicide investigation are both types of death investigations that aim to determine the cause and manner of a person's death. However, there are some key differences between them. For example, a suicide investigation is conducted when there's evidence that the person intentionally harmed themselves to end their own life. A homicide investigation is conducted where there is evidence that the person was intentionally harmed by another person or by grossly reckless behavior. Also, a suicide investigation may involve examining the scene for signs of premeditation, motive, or coercion, such as, we discussed before, a suicide note, a history of mental illness, or evidence of threats or abuse. A homicide investigation may involve examining the scene for signs of a struggle, perhaps defensive wounds, or staging, such as blood spatter patterns, the gunshot's trajectory, or the body's position, all part of a crime scene investigation. A suicide investigation may require a medical expert to confirm that the person's death, as we reported earlier, was self-inflicted and not caused by another person or by accident. A homicide investigation may require a forensic expert to identify the suspect, the weapon, and the manner of death. Both types of investigations are complex and require careful and thorough examination of the evidence, the scene, and the circumstances surrounding the death. Again, we ask, why didn't this happen in this case? Whose job is it to do this if law enforcement doesn't do it themselves? The goal is to establish the truth and provide justice for the deceased and their loved ones. Not to leave the survivors with a host of unanswered questions. Questions such as, how in the Sam hell would there be bruising on Crystal's hands and her inner thighs, as well as a missing fingernail from her perfectly manicured left hand, without some form of a struggle? Now let me tell you, trust me when I tell you, most bruises form when small blood vessels or capillaries near the skin's surface are broken by the impact of a blow or an injury. We've all gotten bruises. When this happens, blood leaks out of the vessels and initially appears as a dark mark. Eventually, the body reabsorbs the blood and the mark disappears. Within 24 hours of an injury, a bruise often starts out reddish, because fresh, oxygenated, rich blood pools underneath the skin. Now, darker skin may not show noticeable reddening, but may appear darker. After 1 or 2 days, the blood begins to lose oxygen and changes color. The 4 stages of bruising unveil themselves in this manner. It's usually red right after the injury. With a day or two, it turns purplish or black and blue. In 5 to 10 days, it may be green or yellow. And in 10 to 14 days, it's yellowy, brown, or light brown. There had to have been a pre-mortem struggle. Had to have been. As the blood stops flowing, bruising cannot occur and does not occur after death. Now let me tell you this. The good Lord hasn't called me home yet. I'm blessed. I've lived a good life, for sure. I'm blessed way beyond measure and far beyond what I merit. I've lived a long time. Marriage has taught me many a things. I'm married to my best friend. She's my biggest blessing. Just a few of those things that I've learned is that a woman cares dearly about many, many things. Just three of those things are her hair, her hands, and her feet. Crystal's hands were immaculately manicured. She took very good care of herself. She wouldn't be walking around with one broken nail off of her hand. Again, the evidence shows that there had to have been a pre-mortem struggle. In the United States, a coroner or a medical examiner determines whether a death is a suicide and records that decision on the death certificate. In the Pelican State, the Louisiana State Constitution, at Article 5, Section 29, provides generally that each parish shall have an elected coroner with a term of 4 years, and provides for the qualifications of such coroner. Again, in the Pelican State, the duties, autopsies, and investigations governing Louisiana laws and revised codified statutes can be found at Title 13. Under the heading of Courts and Judicial Procedure, Section 13:5713, specifically listed Duties, Autopsies, and Investigations, RS 13:5713. Now, some relevant and crucial aspects of Louisiana law and these elements state clearly that the coroner shall either view the body or make an investigation into the cause and manner of death in all cases involving the following. Number 1, suspicious, unexpected, or unusual deaths. Number 2, sudden or violent deaths. Number 3, deaths due to unknown or obscure causes or any unusual manner. 4, bodies found dead. 5th, deaths due to suspected suicide or homicide. Number 6, deaths in which poison is suspected. Number 7, any death from natural causes occurring in a hospital under 24 hours of admission. Number 8, deaths following an injury or accident either old or recent. Number 9, deaths due to drowning, hanging, burns, electrocution, gunshot wounds, stabs or cutting, lightning, starvation, radiation, exposure, alcoholism, addiction, tetanus, strangulation, suffocation, or smothering. Number 10, deaths due to trauma from whatever cause. 11, deaths due to criminal means or by casualty. And finally, number 12, deaths in prison or while serving a sentence. Now, the coroner shall establish the identification of the deceased, make a determination of the cause of death, and a determination of the manner of death as well. Identification may be as easy as having a family member at the scene when you get there, or as difficult as having only a few bones to work with and having to utilize one of the many experts available to your coroner. The cause of death is the final factor or event that happened to the deceased. If this had not happened, the individual would still be alive. Now, this could be a cascade of factors, several in a long line, or events, one following the other, and this will be reflected on the death certificate that the coroner files with the county health department or the parish health department. As an example, cause of death for a mechanic working under a car that fell off its jack or lifts could be asphyxia, the inability to breathe due to chest compression, due to settling of the automobile, due to the failure of the jacking apparatus. Now, this group of factors is referred to as the mechanism which led to asphyxia, which is the cause of death. The manner of death is a descriptive grouping. It is, however, a firmly set, universally accepted acknowledgement of how people die. These possibilities are, as we itemized in our previous episode, homicide, suicide, accident, natural, and undetermined. To address the difficulty in assessing whether a death is a homicide or a suicide, during the pre-production phase for this episode, we reached out to a working group representing coroners, medical examiners, statisticians, and public health agencies throughout northeastern Ohio who helped to develop operational criteria to assist coroners and medical examiners in determining when a suicide has been committed versus a homicide. Now, for brevity, we'll summarize just a few of the findings in order to try to help advance our listeners' knowledge on the topic. The following are the working group's findings. Criteria for determining suicide. The wound or wounds must be self-inflicted. This may be determined by pathologic autopsy, toxicologic, investigatory, and psychologic evidence, and by statements of the decedent or witnesses. Now, regarding intent and specific intent, there is evidence which has to be explicit and or implicit that at the time of injury, the decedent intended to kill himself or herself or wished to die, and that the decedent understood the probable consequences of his or her actions. This evidence may include explicit verbal or nonverbal expression of an intent to kill oneself. Also, implicit or indirect evidence of intent to die, such as preparations for death, inappropriate to or unexpected in the context of the decedent's life, or an expression of farewell or the desire to die, or an acknowledgement of impending death, an expression of hopelessness, expressions of great emotional or physical pain or distress, and an effort to procure or learn about means of death or to rehearse such fatal behavior. 4. Precautions to avoid rescue. 5. Evidence that the decedent recognized the high potential lethality of the means of death. And the 6th point, a previous suicide attempt or attempts and previous suicide threat or threats, as well as successful events or significant losses, actual or threatened, or serious depression or mental disorders. Hear me well again, ain't no evidence of none of that in this case. Now, as we press forward, crucial to the overall process, we have to address, what is a medico-legal death investigation? A medico-legal death investigation, again, that's MEDICOLEGAL, medico-legal death investigation, is a process whereby a coroner, medical examiner, or forensic pathologist working with the police seek to understand how and why a person died. The coroner, medical examiner, or pathologist must answer 5 questions when investigating a death. Who died? What was the person's name, if known? When did the death occur? Where did the death occur? What was the cause of death? What physical disease, physical condition, or physical injury, or a combination of, caused the death? What was the manner of death? Natural, accident, suicide, homicide, or undetermined? The purpose of a medico-legal death investigation is to present medical findings, not to determine civil or criminal liability. These findings may be submitted as evidence in criminal or civil proceedings. However, they are medical findings and not legally binding. Throughout this podcast series, when we refer to medico-legal death investigation, we're referring specifically to this non-legally binding fact-finding process, not the criminal investigation process. So to summarize, medico-legal death investigative offices make 2 determinations: the cause of death, or what immediately led to the death, and the manner of death. A categorization of the cause of death and the known circumstances surrounding it. What exactly is a death investigation? What appears to be a natural death may be criminal. An apparent suicide may actually be an accidental death, and a natural death may reveal serious implications for survivors. Because of criminal, civil, and public health implications, your coroner must treat every death carefully. Death investigations provide evidence to convict the guilty and protect the innocent when they're accused of murder, child maltreatment, neglect, or other crimes. Death investigations aid civil litigation, such as in malpractice or personal injury or life insurance claims. Upon first learning that a person in the county or in the parish has died from violence, casualty, or an accident, mishap, or disaster, also including unusual circumstances, suspicious activity, or while in apparently good health, the coroner will notify a local law enforcement agency. Together, they investigate the scene. Often, the coroner must restrict access to the death scene in order to properly carry out the investigation. Some county coroners do not need the family's permission to conduct an investigation, but do hasten to complete their investigations so that the family may grieve in peace. Proper documentation of the death scene is critical to the coroner's determination. The purpose of a death investigation is to determine if a crime has been committed, to obtain evidence, to identify the person responsible or persons responsible for the crime, and to provide the best possible evidence to the prosecutor as the judge or jury determines criminal or civil liability. You may be wondering, what type of cases does a coroner investigate? Coroners investigate homicides, suicides, crashes, death by natural causes, inmate deaths, or cases in which cause of death originated while the deceased was incarcerated, deaths caused by diseases that may be public health threats as well, deaths from people whose bodies are to be cremated, buried at sea, transported out of state, or otherwise unavailable for pathological study, and deaths of transplant surgery donors that are the result of some type of trauma. The vast majority of coroner investigations are natural deaths, including situations in which there's no attending physician to sign the death certificate, or sudden or unexpected deaths, or cases involving alcohol or other drugs of abuse. Death scenes often present the investigator with many dynamic challenges. It is crucially important to understand the evidence and patterns of evidence at the crime scene in order to effectively investigate any death, homicide, or suicide alike. The entire range of forensic evidence encountered in a death scene is crucial to the successful investigation and outcome. Proper crime scene response and investigation is key to solving death cases. The investigator must have at his or her disposal the proper crime scene management concepts and subsequent crime scene investigation methods. Crime scene reconstruction is an essential aspect to documenting the death scene, along with a timely, thorough autopsy. The medico-legal death investigation system is responsible for conducting death investigations and certifying the cause and manner of unnatural and unexplained deaths. Unnatural and unexplained deaths include homicides, suicides, unintentional injuries, drug-related deaths, and other deaths that are sudden or unexpected. Approximately 20% of the 2.4 million deaths in the U.S. each year are investigated by medical examiners and coroners, accounting for approximately 450,000 medico-legal death investigations annually. Let's talk briefly about what are the four major problems in conducting death investigations. I have to tell you, it all begins at the crime scene, and this is where most of the errors occur. For example, an improper response to the scene. First responding officers may not properly secure the scene and the immediate area. There can be a failure to protect the crime scene. Also, not handling suspicious deaths as homicides, as well as a rush to judgment. And that's what we submit happened in this case. A rush to judgment. Why? It's imperative for law enforcement officials to meet with, explain, and provide facts to a bereaved family of a deceased person. That's only logical to do. Equally essential is the fact that the coroner shall perform or cause to be performed by a competent physician an autopsy in the case of any death where there's a reasonable probability that the violation of a criminal statute has contributed to the death. From TV, you may have an idea of what an autopsy is, but trust me, there's a lot more that goes into one than TV can bear to show. An autopsy is a medical term that refers to the examination of an already deceased body. You know that. The word itself is derived from the word autotopsia, which is a Greek word that means to see with one's own eyes. The procedure can also be referred to as an abduction or post-mortem examination. And the word abduction is O-B-D-U-C-T-I-O-N, abduction. As we've touched on it before, there are several reasons for an autopsy to be performed, some of which include the following. when an unexpected or perhaps even suspicious death occurs, when the cause of death needs to be determined to confirm a clinical diagnosis, also for academic purposes such as research or teaching at a medical school, and to gain insight into possible genetic traits or diseases in a family, as well as to provide evidence in a crime investigation, and to provide closure for family members of the deceased, on request by a family member or a medical doctor, and in the case of a public medical health concern, such as an outbreak of disease. Autopsies are performed by medical doctors who have undergone specialized training in the examination of tissues and fluids in a body to determine a diagnosis. These skilled doctors are called pathologists. While this is the case for all clinical autopsies that are performed, a county coroner or a parish coroner can do an autopsy in the event of the procedure being ordered by the state. An autopsy will generally take 3 to 4 hours to complete, except if there are excessive complications in the process. It is best to perform the procedure within 24 hours of death. Now, to be clear, you may be wondering, what's the purpose and importance of an autopsy? Well, like we've said before, the autopsy represents the examination of the body after its death in order to determine the cause and manner of death, as well as to evaluate any disease or injury that may be present. Let's discuss the 5 objectives of an autopsy. The principal aim or aims of an autopsy are to, as we mentioned, determine the cause of death, the mode of death, as well as the manner of death, the state of the health of the person before he or she died, and whether any medical diagnosis and treatment before death were appropriate. Now, I'm sure you've seen examples of an autopsy on TV, perhaps on an episode of CSI. You may be wondering, how is an autopsy performed? First off, there's an external examination. A pathologist starts an autopsy from the outside of the body and works inwards. Therefore, the first step in the procedure is an external examination. The pathologist will look at the outer appearance, including clothes and accessories. They note characteristics such as weight, height, eye color, hair color, texture, and length, ethnicity, sex, and approximate age. This information can help provide evidence, as well as give clues to an identity if the body has not been positively identified. The next step is still a part of the external examination, but it consists of having a closer look at the body itself. All, and I mean all, of the clothes are taken off of the body until it is fully exposed. Then the skin is carefully examined. Some of the things a pathologist will look for are gunpowder residue, flakes of skin or paint, injuries, or any evidence that can be used to determine what caused the death. They will also look at scars, tattoos, or any identifying marks. Next, x-rays are taken. X-rays can be used to assess whether there are any bone abnormalities or foreign objects in the body, and ultraviolet light can be used to detect specific residues. This is part of the procedure where hair or nail samples may be taken for further examination. This marks the end of the external examination. But note that all of the observations are written down, as well as recorded verbally. Next comes the internal examination. The internal examination includes the examining of the chest and abdominal cavities, as well as the brain. This is done by making careful incisions. The chest and abdomen are accessed through Y or U-shaped incisions, which start at the shoulder, then meets at the sternum, and finally reaches the pubic bone. The brain is reached by making an incision from ear to ear in the back of the skull, or by a triangular incision across the top part of the skull. These incisions bleed minimally, as the heart is no longer pumping blood. Before making the incisions, the torso is placed on a rubber block. in a way that stretches out the body for maximum exposure and optimal examinations. After performing the Y or U incision, the pathologist first examines all of the organs in place by removing the frontal part of the rib cage, and then all of the major organs, including the heart, lungs, liver, stomach, and spleen. I know this may be tough for some, but these are the facts. The removal can be done using one of two techniques, the Virchow, V-I-R-C-H-O-W, the Virchow technique, which consists of removing each organ individually, or the Rokitansky technique. And that word Rokitansky is R-O-K-I-T-A-N-S-K-Y. The Rokitansky technique, during which all of the organs are removed at once. The organs are then weighed to detect the presence of certain illnesses. Blood samples are also taken for further investigation. And small pieces of tissue from each organ is examined under a microscope. The contents of the stomach are then examined. This is a good indicator of time of death, as the last meal, as well as its level of digestion, can be seen and used to determine a time frame. The next step is the testing of bodily fluids. Body fluids are tested for anything and everything, from drugs to chemical and genetic composition to infection, depending on the type of autopsy. Some of these fluids include blood, urine, bile, eye fluid, just to name a few. Note well that some poisons will only be observable in some parts of the body, but not in others. The organs are then either placed back in the body or preserved for teaching or research purposes. The next step is the examination of the brain. Brain examination. A pathologist will then typically move on to the area of the head. Another more concentrated external examination will take place to determine whether there are any signs of a head injury or trauma. Then, an incision is made, and just like with the other organs, the brain is first examined inside the body, then removed to be examined further. Tissue samples are also taken. Some of the other organs, but especially the brain, are often placed in formalin, a liquid, for a number of days before a dissection takes place. This is done to allow the organs to become firmer, which increase the ease and precision of the dissections. If the pathologist finds anything unusual in any of the acquired tissue, the tissue will be preserved. And then final steps for final procedures take place. Once all of the organs have been thoroughly examined and either been put back or been preserved, the body is stitched back up. The breastbone and ribs are also returned to their original positions. Before the organs are returned, they're placed in bags to prevent leakage, and the inside of the body is lined with a wool-like substance. This procedure does not disturb an open casket funeral, and none of the incisions will be visible after the burial preparations have been made. The autopsy report and medical diagnosis is generated. Furthermore, it's important to note that each autopsy will be unique, depending on the purpose of the procedure. During the autopsy, photographs may be taken. This can be done for a number of reasons. For example, photographs of the findings can be taken to use as evidence in a court of law. Photographs of the organs or tissues can be taken for teaching and research purposes. Furthermore, some of the organs may be preserved in formalin, as we mentioned, to allow for more examinations, as well as sampling to use in microscopy and presentation at conferences or lectures, and used during medical training. It's important to note that the pathologist needs to be granted permission by the family to preserve any organs. Tissues may be frozen and stored for future use, diagnostic, or research purposes. There are also certain laboratory studies that can be requested to be done, including but not limited to cultures to identify certain infectious agents like bacteria, viruses, or even fungi, chemical analysis to identify metabolic abnormalities, genetic studies to identify any harmful mutations, as well as toxicology studies to identify any exposure to drugs or poisons. At the end of the procedure, an in-depth report is written. This report contains all of the observations made during the procedure, as well as explanations of any of the findings and the results. It also gives a medical diagnosis and a detailed summary of the case, explaining how conclusions were drawn. In this process, you may be wondering, when can an autopsy be requested? In the U.S., the procedure can be ordered if the death took place surrounded by suspicious circumstances or in special circumstances, like a death that takes place during a surgical procedure. If an autopsy is not ordered, it can be requested by a relative who gives permission for it to be performed. This relative also has the right to determine the nature and scope of the procedure, determining which organs may be examined or used for other purposes after the procedure. Accuracy and quality are crucial in the process. There are a lot of different tools and instruments that are necessary to carry out a successful autopsy. If these tools are not of the highest quality, various complications can arise. For example, during an autopsy, accuracy is crucial, and an inaccurate reading caused by cheap instruments can create a significant change in the conclusion drawn. An autopsy is a complicated procedure that requires a lot of different instruments, as well as different perspectives and approaches. It can be used for a variety of various reasons, but it ultimately allows a pathologist to draw an accurate conclusion. Like we mentioned, there are many tools necessary during an autopsy, some of which include post-mortem saws, rib shears, bone-cutting forceps, as well as post-mortem needles and head blocks. A head block is designed for multiple positions for full head control. It's made from chemical-resistant material and passes the OSHA protocols for cleanliness. However, the things that can determine the success or failure of the procedure are the larger equipment. For example, body coolers. Body coolers are essential for the preservation of bodies and the delay of the decomposition of the body. Having a dead body that smells bad and looks like it is decaying before your eyes is not ideal at a funeral. Body coolers avoid this situation. Having good quality body coolers is therefore a necessity and a necessary part of an autopsy and everything that comes before and after the procedure. Everyone's familiar with the autopsy tables. You see them on CSI. Autopsy tables are used to support the body during the procedure and are designed to allow the body to be positioned in a way that allows for the most efficient examination. They also provide a clean and smooth surface on which to work on. These tables need to be sturdy, stable, and made of good quality strong material to ensure longevity and optimal use. An autopsy table with a sink is a piece of equipment that allows the practitioners to wash the body and keep everything clean and hygienic. This is especially important because of the sterile nature of the procedure and the environment in which it takes place. Also crucial to the process is embalming sink stations. Embalming refers to the preservation of the body. As previously mentioned, this is not only essential for the funeral, but also for the autopsy procedure as well. An embalming sink station is an effective way to keep your facility clean and safe to use. Furthermore, when dealing with things like human flesh and organs, things tend to get a little bit messy. It's necessary and crucial to have an area where you can clean up so hygiene can be maintained as well. Let's talk about the body concealment table, or a cadaver cart. Cadaver cart. Protecting the body from stares is a good way of showing respect to the person that once occupied that body. It's inevitable that the body would need to be transported, and having a body concealment trolley is the perfect way to respect the body and give it the privacy it deserves. While this device is not strictly necessary in a medical sense, it's best to have one at the ready. the body weighing scale. Body weight can tell the pathologist a lot of different things and help them draw various conclusions. It is often challenging to maneuver a dead body in order to weigh it, and a body weighing scale is the perfect instrument to simplify the process. A good quality scale is therefore significant to ensure an accurate reading. As we press further, you may be wondering, why are autopsies performed? If no determination of death can be reasonably made based on case history and medical records, the coroner may request an autopsy be performed to determine cause of death. Autopsies are examinations both external and internal of a deceased person's body. The results may be helpful in preventative measures for other family members to determine inherited or genetic disease. An autopsy is also performed on all fire deaths, all criminal deaths, and the death of an infant and child. Now, you may be wondering, who pays for the autopsy? If the death is an out-of-the-hospital death and/or under suspicious circumstances, the coroner will review the facts and may order an autopsy. This expense is paid for by the county or by the parish. If, however, the family is requesting an autopsy, state statute states that the party requesting the autopsy is responsible for the payment. Costs can range from about $2,500 to $5,000 for a private autopsy. Also, you may be wondering, who performs the autopsy in the state of Louisiana? That's a good question. When a death occurs and a crime or accident is suspected, the coroner of the parish where the crime or accident occurred shall be responsible for any investigation into the cause and manner of death and for any examination of the body or autopsy. In the state of Ohio, where we broadcast, an autopsy can only be performed by a board-certified pathologist. You may be wondering, can I get a copy of the autopsy report? An autopsy report is an investigative record. It can only be released to the legal next of kin or an insurance company who has a claim arising from the death in accordance with the local governing laws. The question, can I come see my loved one, may arise. Now, due to legal and health issues, visitation of a loved one is done only at a funeral home of the family's choice. Let's examine the question, what other information is released by the coroner? The public information that must be released upon request according to the local governing laws. In Ohio, the code says that the coroner is required to make available for public inspection and copying the following information: name, age, race, and the address of the deceased, the address where the body was found, the name of the agency to which death was reported, the name of the person reporting the death, as well as the name of public official or government employee present at the death scene. Also, the name of the person certifying the death and information regarding an autopsy, if performed, limited to the date, the person who performed the autopsy, where it was performed, and a conclusion as to A, the probable cause, and B, the probable manner, as well as C, the probable mechanism, and a specific detailed location as to where the body was removed to. And you also may be wondering, how long does it take to determine the cause of death? When the cause of death is dependent upon the pathologist's study and lab tests, 4 to 6 weeks or more may be necessary. Also, the coroner is dependent at times on information gathered by the law enforcement agency of jurisdiction to aid them in their investigation as to the manner and mechanism of death. Also, insurance companies depend on these facts in order to pay proper death benefits. Some of you may be wondering, with all this talk about death, what do I do if a loved one passes away at home? Call 911. A police officer and the coroner will be dispatched to your residence to investigate the death and assist you. If you're not sure if the subject is deceased, paramedics will also be dispatched. While you are waiting, it is extremely helpful if you can gather the decedent's medications and determine their last visit to the doctor. Also, locate any DNR, do not resuscitate, forms for EMS and the coroner, and locate indicate your loved one's doctor's phone number as well. Now, we've covered a lot of territory in a very short period of time, so let's tap the clutch just for a second and examine and expose just a few of the glaring irregularities in this specific case. It's a fact. The medical examiner misspelled the decedent's name multiple times on his paperwork, spelling her name C-H-R-Y-S-T-A-L, when in fact, if any attention to detail was given, he would have seen and known that her name was spelled commonly as Crystal, C-R-Y-S-T-A-L. On page 3 of the autopsy report, hair color on autopsy is listed as blondish, brown, soiled with blood. Crystal's correct hair color is dark brown, almost jet black. In many photos that I've seen, the eye color in the autopsy report is listed as hazel. Crystal's correct eye color is brown. In the genitourinary system, page 5 of the report, the autopsy reports the female reproductive organs were unremarkable. Now, if the truth were told, Crystal had several female surgeries where her critical female structures were removed. In fact, she did not have all of the female organs that the ME listed in his report. On page 6 of the musculoskeletal system, the autopsy reports that cervical, thoracic, and lumbar spine showed no obvious old fractures or other abnormalities. Now, the fact of the matter is that on February 11th of 2011, Crystal was involved in a major car accident in Shreveport, Louisiana, that left her with a broken back, broken sternum, and multiple broken ribs. So who exactly was this doctor examining? Because his findings certainly don't represent the body of Crystal McCrory Jones. The purpose of a medical legal death investigation is to present medical findings, not to determine civil or criminal liability. Death investigations provide evidence to convict the guilty and protect the innocent, whether they are accused of murder, child maltreatment, neglect, or other crimes. Death investigations aid civil litigation, such as in malpractice, personal injury, or life insurance claims. Because suicide is considered an unnatural death, the authorities are required to investigate. Suicide is not, I repeat, suicide is not against the law, but given that there are cases where perhaps a homicide has been made to look like a suicide, the authorities will want to make certain that the suicide has not been staged to cover up any foul play. It seems that, sadly, too often in America, thorough death investigations of either type are not conducted. Again, the only thing in this case, to date, that has been proven is that every aspect of the criminal justice system and those officials charged with honoring their oaths to protect and serve and to do their sworn duty failed Crystal, failed the surviving members of her family, let down and violated the spirit and the letter of the law. And it puts everyone who lives in the area on notice that if this can happen to her, this can happen to you. Again, at the outset, we stated emphatically the fact that we aren't accusing anyone of anything specifically. As seasoned journalists and investigators, we know better than to do that. And we know that in every case, the evidence has to drive the investigator, not the other way around, where the investigator drives the evidence. Like many others that are close to this case, we too are requesting that the offices of the Sheriff Scott D. Matthews and District Attorney Penny Ducier reopen the investigation, and this time investigate the case, or in the alternative, at the bare minimum, as moving legal papers for members of the surviving family have stated clearly and emphatically, conduct a deep scraping and a forensic investigation into Mr. Jones's cell phone, any computers in their shared home, and any and all relevant social media posts which may in fact exonerate or implicate and ultimately determine what role, if any, he may have played. I think those are fair requests. I really do. The surviving family members couldn't get the Louisiana State Police to investigate the case. Why wouldn't they take the case? Why not? The death investigation was rushed at best. if any investigation even ever took place at all. Why rush to judgment? What was so special and unique about Crystal McCrory Jones that they had to change all of their SOPs, their standard operating procedures and protocols, in order to quickly dispatch and address this lady's death? Also, we want to remind our listeners that there is a change.org petition that you can sign at www.change.org regarding the request to reopen the investigation into the death of Crystal McCrory Jones. And we'll provide that special HTML address in the liner notes for this special episode once it's ready for uploading. Also, and this is very important, please consider joining the Facebook group entitled Justice for Crystal McCrory Jones. When a family is grieving from the sudden, unexpected, tragic death of a loved one, it compounds the injury and adds salt to the already open wound when the family has to fight with the sheriff, the district attorney, the coroner's office, and members of law enforcement. It really only serves one purpose: to wear those people down. Wear them down even further into the ground, unnecessarily. Who needs that? No one. Not this family, not any family. If members of the West Carroll Parish Sheriff's Department aren't trained properly, then they need to be retrained. There's federal funding dollars for that. If the sheriff isn't going to do his job, he needs to be recalled. I'll say that again. If the sheriff isn't going to do his job, he needs to be recalled. If the district attorney won't do her job, she needs to be recalled. Justice can't be in place for some people if it isn't in place for all people. Trust me when I tell you, you don't want to live in a society like that for long. Yes, there certainly is unequal justice in this country. But at some point, we have to band together and bend the arc of justice in the proper direction. We've been steering on the ice in the recent past for far too long. But what would you do if Crystal was your daughter, your mom, your sister, your wife, your friend? Even if she's an absolute perfect stranger to you, she still deserves justice and an investigation into her death. Wouldn't you fight for her, fight for her memory, and work to your very own dying breath to bring her killer to justice? You know, until we start to see other people's children as our own and treat them with love and dignity, we'll never make any progress as a collective people. No one is above the law. No one. Not even the President of the United States of America. Neither is the killer in this case. Hey, I'm Phil Rizzo, and you've got Light 'Em Up.
Hey, I want to thank my friends at Innisfree for their promotional products and underwriting. Their fresh-squeezed hydrating green tea, loaded with amino acids and antioxidants, help replenish and neutralize skin for that natural glow. You want to know the best part? Their tea is organically grown and chosen for skincare from 3,301 Korean native green tea varieties. The winning 1-2-3 punch combination consists of the youth-enhancing serum with black tea. Then you just dap a little bit of the eye serum underneath your eyes. And finally, the enhancing cream. Oh my goodness. Like Muhammad Ali used to say, I'm pretty. I'm still pretty. They offer innovative beauty solutions for men, also powered by the finest natural ingredients responsibly sourced from Korea's pristine Jeju Island. Their proprietary extraction methods preserve the purity and potency of these wholesome ingredients from plant to bottle to your skin, offering advanced formulas that safely address all skin concerns without the use of harmful chemicals and preservatives. With the wonders of nature at the heart of Innisfree, they take care to preserve and protect the environment in all that they do. We want to thank our friends at Innisfree for their promotional products and underwriting of Light 'Em Up.
Hey, don't forget to subscribe to us on YouTube and Instagram at Rizzo's Protective Group. We're very excited about being ranked 10th out of the top 35 criminal justice podcasts as ranked and listed by FeedSpot. Hey, don't forget to subscribe to FeedSpot at www.feedspot.com. And please,
por favor, per favore, visit our friends at https://newsly.me. Newsly is an audio app for iOS and Android. It picks up web articles about the most trending topics on the web at any given moment and reads them to you in a natural human voice. For the first time in the history of the internet, the entire web becomes listenable. You can browse articles from topics you choose and start playing. Hey, stop scrolling, start listening. You can follow any topic, as specific as you like, from sports, science, to Bitcoin. It'll find you the latest articles and read them to you. Hey, it's as easy as that. And to top it off, they have podcasts as well. Explore trending podcasts from over 50 countries. Our podcast, Light 'Em Up, is there too. I started using it as my default podcast app, and you can too. Download and use Newsly for free now from www.newsly.me or from the link in the podcast description liner notes and use the promo code Light 'Em Up. And Light 'Em Up in this case is spelled LGHTEMUP. All one word. That's LGHTEMUP. All one word.